Welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the rapid voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Rapid?
Yes. Well, listen, we've got to be quick.
We have today.
Sadly, it's very frustrating, but there are things going on and we're just going to have to rattle right through this.
Let's do this.
Like
I'm ready.
Quick goalkeeper. Were you a quick goalkeeper, by the way?
I'd like to think I was quite sharp. Yeah, that was kind of one of my strengths. I wasn't the biggest. Bit of a cliche. So I had to rely on other things. Speed, power, spring.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to press the timer on this clock because we need to be as quick as we possibly can. I'm going to try and make it a quick half an hour.
Boom.
Okay.
I mean, half an hour, whether it's quick or not, but I know what you mean.
I'm going to, yeah.
All right, but we're kind of wasting time now, right, so let's just press record now.
Okay, we are going to jump straight into the Champions League. Of course, Champions League and the Championship this week. It is Europa League tonight, but we're not going to be able to get onto that, so we'll brush right past it. First up, Salzburg v Liverpool, 2-0 to Liverpool. Stankovic, the Salzburg goalkeeper. I believe he was potentially at fault for the first one, but we're going to talk about the second one where Mo Salah scored from the most ridiculous of angles, of course. But Steve McManaman on commentary, by the way, said, goalkeeper's starting position is all wrong. I thought for the first goal he was out of position, ditto for the second one.
So, first and foremost, I think with a name like Stankovic, you're a bit unfortunate with a name like that. You can't help but feel that's going to lead to negative headlines from time to time, you know?
Some great players over the years called Stankovic, by the way.
Very true, very true. No, look, for me, the second one, I felt a bit sorry for him in the fact that it was a poor back pass, or a poor header back, wasn't it, from memory. So the fact that he's then taken his position and made his decision based on that, I don't think it's too bad. And what he's ultimately done is put Salah wide. Now, how Salah scored, I still can't figure it out. It defies logic for me, bearing in mind that he's going down the line. He's effectively doing an outswinger pretty much from the byline. He somehow squeezed it in. I think, I don't know, 99 times out of 100, the player misses that shot. So I don't think what Stankovic has done is necessarily too bad. I think the decision to come, he was never going to get there, but he knows by coming close enough, he's going to force Salah very, very wide. And you would think that would then lead to a goal kick or Salah having to put it in the box and hope that he can find one of his teammates. Now, is it the right decision or the wrong decision? This comes down to what ends up happening. In the end, it ends up being the wrong decision because they score. However, as I say, percentages say that ordinarily that doesn't result in a goal. Similarly, if he stays, it may well be a one-on-one, which may arguably give Salah a better chance, percentage-wise, if that makes sense. So, look, it's always easy to say when a goal's gone in, oh, bad decision, shouldn't have come, rush of blood. But actually, I think if he stays, it gives Salah more chance of scoring. I think we do need to give Salah a lot of credit because it's just a quite incredible finish.
Yeah, indeed. 9 attempts as well from Salah, so you've got to give Stankovic some credit as well for keeping him at bay, especially the one where his one-on-one, he tried to take it round him. Yep. That was a very good save.
Made some big saves. And it's always, as we do, look, we tend to pick up on the goals and we critique them and explain what the goalkeeper's thinking and why it's a mistake or why it isn't a mistake. But I do think we need to highlight the fact that Liverpool were rampant on the night. The fact that it was 2-0, it could have been 7-0. They were brilliant.
Moving on to Napoli Genk. This one's an interesting one. Quite a rout in the end. 4-0 to Napoli. But Martin van der Voort, the youngest goalkeeper in Champions League history at 17 years and 287 days. Fair to say, he had quite the introduction to Champions League football.
He did. I felt horrible for him. And you could see it happening before it's even happened. You could see what was about to happen. And I think this is largely down to the culture that's been created, the idea of wanting the goalkeeper that just plays at all times. But I'll stick with it. There are times when you just got to get rid. And the ball's passed to him. He's in his six-yard box. He's being closed down left and right. Even if he has a brilliant touch, he's still got to be able to look up and find a pass, thread a pass. Because if that pass isn't on, he's not going to be able to get the leverage to clear it because the ball's going to be under his feet. He's only going to end up toe-punting it maybe 10, 15 yards anyway. So I think this will come with experience. I think in a moment like that, and certainly when it's early into your Champions League debut and so on and so forth, I think a moment like that, you have to go safety first. I appreciate, and I look back, I was, as personally as a goalkeeper, I was always too safe, I'd say, and I always erred on the side of safety, which meant I didn't make a lot of mistakes. But what I'd also admit is that I maybe didn't keep possession as much as I could have made or could have done. So I think there is somewhere in the middle. I think in this case, I just think this is very much a case of looking to overplay.
Yeah, you could see the Napoli attackers just waiting to pounce as well. His defenders didn't do him any favours. Fair to say, I think it was 4-0. I think three of the four goals were a shame for him. That first one you just mentioned there. Second, I don't think he could do anything about. The third one was the foul on Jose Callejon for the penalty. He basically jumped forward at him. That was a bad error. And the fourth penalty, Dries Mertens steps up. Penenka.
Yeah.
Cheers. Dortmund 2, Slavia Prague 1. Roman Bürki with a quite incredible stop in this one.
So for all the goalkeepers out there that are doing drills up and down the country, and you might do the double save drill where it's you make a save low down to your left and you get up and make a save high up to your right. This is exactly why you do that particular drill, or drills that involve you going down, getting up, because it's just phenomenal. The fact that it's taken the deflection that it did, he's down on the floor to have the power and the speed to get up in the way in which he did and get a hand to it and put it over the bar. This is one of the best saves I've seen in 2019. I've watched it over and over. I just think, again, this is the drill that you'll have done 1,000 times and you may never necessarily use, or you don't use that often, but it is for the moment like this where he's able to use all of that. And it was just, for me, it was the speed from being down to up to make the save. Fantastic save.
Yeah, brilliant. Deflected off Marco Reus. It was a Lucas Massipa shot. Just, it went viral on social media. It was mad. Another great save at the end of that as well from Youssef Halal. Obviously helped Dortmund get through to the knockout stages. He did say after the game, I don't know whether this was to do with the fact that they got through or the save, but he said, it was an absolute goosebump raising moment. I really had to pull myself together. I thought I was going to cry with joy.
Amazing.
Wonderful
Amazing.
Stuff.
Amazing. Look, we say a lot on the show. It's often rare that goalkeepers get the credit they deserve. So it's great when you see someone have a moment like this and when it's such a valuable moment.
Just very quickly touching on the saves, you don't really have to elaborate on them. Spurs losing 3-1 at the Allianz to Bayern. Paulo Gazzaniga with another good save, though, from Philippe Coutinho, touching it onto the bar, just like he did against Marcus Rashford, to be fair. Although I'd say this one is probably an even better save.
Yeah, well, just touching the Gazzaniga one, you're right. It actually moves a little bit on him as well. So if you watch again, he just takes ever so slightly a step to the left, then back to the right. And in the end, it is the smallest of fingertips, but it's so crucial because as it comes down, at first it looks like it's gone over the line, but you know, obviously the whole ball hasn't gone over the line. And credit to Gazzaniga, he's making a good stint of this. He's had a decent run in the team so far. And in fairness, I think it's fair to say that he's been very, very solid throughout.
Right, into the Championship as well. Leeds 2, Hull 0. Kiko Kessié with another very good save. And the big thing about this is that his initial save from one particular move ended up in a goal. I think it was about 30 seconds up the other end goal.
Bizarre. No, it's a great save to his left. By the way, one of the standout performers this season. I know he had his doubters in the summer. Of course, it didn't end particularly well for him last season in the playoffs, and a poor game, I think he would admit himself, which then led to Leeds going out of the playoffs. But this season, certainly if you're to buy into the stats that go round, he's one of the best goalkeepers in the league at the moment. I know the Leeds fans absolutely love him. And in fairness, at the moment, defensively, they're very solid. This was a crucial save, and it's great. I mean, not that you can necessarily control what happens after you make the save, but from a moment like this, when you're literally moments from conceding and moments later you go and score, to have a swing like that, and it was like you say, within 30-odd seconds, they've gone up the other end and scored, which just compounded how important a save it was.
Just incredible. I think it's 10 goals now conceded, 12 clean sheets. I think he made a couple of great saves as well against Huddersfield at the weekend. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen yet with this ban. Now, this is the alleged racism to Jonathan Lecco when Leeds were playing Charlton. So we don't know exactly what the outcome of that was. I know they extended it towards the end of November, but it weirdly has gone a bit quiet. If it is sanctioned, I think it's going to be at the beginning of January for something between 10 to 12 games. Like I said, this is all conjecture. We don't know. But that is going to put Leeds in a bit of a tricky position because Meslier is their number two at the moment. They don't really have any experience backup. You wonder whether they might dip into the market.
Quite possibly. Yeah, quite possibly. Look, we've seen elsewhere the impact it can have. We use West Ham as a good example. You lose your number one, someone who is a key member of the team, which he really is, and becoming more of a key member with each passing game. You've got to do it so delicately. It can be so much pressure for someone to step into the shoes of someone who's been so successful. You know, I made this point before on this show, but I had to do it at Brentford. Wojciech Szczesny was the goalkeeper of the season before I joined, and I could feel it. I could feel the first few games I played, there were comparisons being made between me and someone who's just been voted in the top 10 or whatever it is for Golden Glove this year. You know, so it's tough when you're stepping into the shoes of someone who is so loved, and he really is. And the last thing you want is for it to start badly, like it did for Roberto at West Ham, because when it starts badly, before you know it, things can slide and it can fall off the edge of a cliff and it can be very difficult for the goalkeeper coming in. So it's a really delicate situation. If it does happen, if he does get this ban, they've got to be very careful as to who they put in. It's going to need to be someone you would feel that's got the experience to be able to step into a situation like this.
Yeah, indeed it has. Moving on to Bristol City, a very good result for them against Fulham at the weekend. Dan Bentley was very impressive in that one. They lost to Millwall in the week, and Jed Wallace with Millwall's first goal. You've got to question the keeper.
Yeah, I was at this game, and you're right. And it was a funny moment because he has been brilliant this season. I think most Bristol City fans will agree with that. To the point when this goal went in, there were very little mumbles. You know, ordinarily when a goalkeeper makes a mistake, you'll hear a few groans and a few questions. I think the fact he's been so good that no one really gave him any stick whatsoever. But yeah, watching it at the time and watching it back, it was a strange one. You just feel he maybe didn't quite get set as quickly as he could have. The shot took him by surprise a little bit. And even that, he still managed to get down. I think he still expects to save it when he gets down, but just mistimes it ever so slightly. And we're talking a matter of centimetres, a matter of inches. And he just isn't able to get the contact to put it around the post. And in the end, he'll hold his hand up and suggest that he could have saved it.
Oh, yeah. And a very small commentary corner, by the way.
Oh, go on.
It was Kevin Davies and Lee Hendry on Sky Sports. Goalkeeper disappointed there on his near post. That was it.
Right.
So we'll swiftly move on. By the way, I just want to touch on something that was quite funny from Dan Bentley when he conceded the goal to Abubakar Kamara at the weekend for Fulham. Now, there was another example of this, by the way, for Lyon's goalkeeper, Anthony Lopez, when they were playing against RB Leipzig. And that was that Dan Bentley conceded the goal against Abubakar Kamara for Fulham and went and tried to get really angry and grabbed the post behind the goal. Fell over, then had to awkwardly grab onto it and made out like he was styling it out. Anthony Lopez for Lyon conceded the penalty, went to smash the ball. You know how it goes in one part of the side netting and then it ripples around the back of the net and goes to the other one? He then tried to whack it, but completely got his foot caught in the netting, completely missed it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You ever done any stuff like that where you try to get really angry?
You'd often get angry. Everyone has, it's funny, you know, you see certain goalkeepers got certain traits. That was a classic one for so long was, and I call it the Peter Schmeichel effect, where you concede a goal and regardless of what's happened, you would get up and just start shouting. And you didn't really have anybody you were shouting at in particular, but you just get up and be really angry and run to the edge of the box and just start shouting. And there were so many goalkeepers that did that for so long. I think it's shifted a bit now. What you tend to see is more often than not, the ball goes in and there's no reaction. No reaction whatsoever. It's interesting. Every goalkeeper's got their style, but I just feel it's certainly toned down quite a lot. Dan Bentley, though, it is true. I've watched him a lot. He is someone who plays with real passion. He's somebody that's really energized when he plays. It suits him. You know, he's a very powerful goalkeeper. And you feel when he concedes a goal, you can see just how much it hurts him. And he does get very irate.
Barnsley 1, Reading 1, Sam Radlinger playing out from the back yet again to Kenny Dougal. I don't know how many times we see it. Dispossessed, Corley Woodrow scores.
Yeah, look, I get the fact that we're wanting to keep possession and build through the thirds. And in theory, it makes a lot of sense. The more that you keep possession, of course, the more chances you'll create. And we're seeing this more and more. I still feel that there's way too many chances that are being taken from goal kicks where you're seeing the fullbacks or the centre-backs split either side of the six-yard box, just playing it 3 or 4 yards, especially when there's not a great deal that they can do or not a lot of places they can go. All that ends up happening is they do end up pumping it forward. Now, there is some thought behind this in that you stretch play. I do get that. And this is something that we used to do at Brentford. Uwe Ross used to get it. So I'd play out to a fullback. He didn't care if they played it back because what then happens is the strikers, the midfielders will push forward. So then when I clear it, there's a bit more space for it to then drop and hopefully I'll pick up second balls higher up the pitch. So there is some thought to it, but we're seeing far too many goals go in whereby, you know, even the likes of Arsenal getting caught doing this, where they're playing out so short without really having a game plan in mind. And what ends up happening, they're trying to play in really tight spaces, they're losing the ball. And of course, stats show that if you lose the ball in your defensive third, it often ends up in a goal, more often than if you lose, of course, in the attacking third. So I just think you've just got to be a little bit more intelligent in terms of how you do it. We're still seeing far too many goals being scored like this.
Okay, and we had a tweet in from Neil at Lewis Royal. He was focusing on the game between Reading and Birmingham. Now, Reading goalkeeper Rafael Cabral has come under a bit of fire. Neil said, interested in your opinion. Rafael's been getting some criticism from Reading fans. I think he's been beaten by the movement knuckleball style. Now, this was in reference to a Jeremy Bela goal, a free kick that's gone up and over the wall on the keeper's side, top corner.
Yeah, now this is it's a really interesting coaching point, this, because how often have we seen that? The free kick back on themselves. So it is the goalkeeper's side, but of course, because of the flight of the ball, it's a right footer taking it from the right-hand side. So if you can picture it, if you've seen it, then this will make sense. Because of the whip on the ball, it starts so high and it dips into that corner, you've got to consider the trajectory of the ball. Now, if it's going to go up, down, over the wall, then it's going to curl from outside to in. And of course, you'll try and scamper across and get a save on it. If it's coming your side, the chances are it's actually going to go above your head and it's going to dip in above you. So consider where the best position is that you can take. And it's slightly different to maybe a regular free kick, because maybe a regular free kick, you might be a couple of yards off your line. With this, I would argue that you're slightly deeper. You would be only just outside of the wall, so you might be just off centre, but with the understanding that it might be a big save up above you with your right hand, or it might be you're scampering to your left and diving full stretch. In this case, it's the smallest of movements he makes to his left, at which point he can't then get up and back in order to make the save. So again, you've got to be really patient. You've got to wait for the ball to be struck before you make your move. You might have your weight on your left foot just in preparation for it to go over the wall, knowing that you can get back on yourself. I think because of that small movement he's made, that's the reason he can't then get back and tip it over.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Right, keeper capers is something I'm not sure that I've ever seen in football before. Wigan v West Brom. I'm just going to let you take the floor with this one.
It's just a loss of concentration. It's as simple as that. Anyone that hasn't seen this, I mean, it's all over Sky Sports News this morning. Jamie Jones, who is obviously top goalkeeper, playing a goal for Wigan. The ball's passed back to him, and you see the view from behind the goal. He's just not concentrating and he's drinking a bottle of water. He looks up, he sees the ball coming towards him, doesn't know what to do, panics and just picks the ball up. He then holds his hand up, apologises. Of course, they then score from the free kick, which then just magnifies this even more. But it just shows you, look, we've all had moments in a game. I used to go and drink a bottle of water all the time. So for me, it'd always be, we get a corner. I'd literally run back every time we got a corner and have a quick drink of water. And it was more a habit than anything else. You know, you could talk about hydration and all that. For me, it was just a habit. And in this moment, for whatever reason, he was having a drink of water. He must have thought the ball was out of play. And look, switching off for those few seconds proved so costly. I mean, I was talking this morning, we did a show this morning, we saw the goal. And the question was, well, why didn't he just kick it? It's that moment when the ball's coming towards him. He doesn't know if it's a pass back. He doesn't know if it's a through ball. So he's just decided in his panic to pick it up. What I would say, and this might be a lesson for anybody that does lose concentration, of course, the safer thing to do sometimes is just to punt it out for a throw-in. Because as stupid as it might look in the moment, it is forgotten very, very quickly. And you might have a quick argument, have to apologise for switching off, losing your concentration. But by kicking it out for a throw-in, the play's dead. And ordinarily, you can move past it a little bit quicker. Obviously, in this case, that one will stick with him for a while.
I want to say that he would have some banter about that in the changing room afterwards, but the situation at the moment is that Wigan are at the wrong end of the table.
This is it. Not yet. Not yet. I mean, look, at some point he'll look back and I'm sure he'll laugh. At some point, I'm sure we'll get him on our podcast and we'll ask him about it. But no, it's going to be raw because they didn't pick up the 3 points, only picked up a point. Oh, that was a good point, of course, against West Brom. I'm sure we'll talk about the goal the other end as well. An interesting goal that went in the other end, an own goal from Sam Johnson. No, he won't laugh about it yet. It's one of them where years later or months later, providing they're safe, providing it hasn't been costly, then I'm sure he'll be able to see the funny side. But no doubt he'll have woke up the morning after and been a little bit disappointed with it.
Yeah, just quickly on the goal conceded by Sam Johnston. He had a funny game because he made some good saves. There was one very good double save in the first half, but that almost only came about because of a not-so-great initial save that palmed it out into the wrong area. But then he atoned for that with a very good follow-up save. The goal itself, your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's a shot from distance, but he's really got hold of it. It's moving about. I think it's, look, ideally he gets a bigger hand and puts it around the post, which if he does, then it goes down as a very good save. And this, I know we've had this same conversation before about if you were to scale it 1 to 10. Well, look, if he makes the save, it's a good save. And he actually does make the save. And the chances are that when it hits the post, the chances are that it doesn't come back and hit you and go in. But that's exactly what happens. So will he be disappointed? Possibly that he couldn't have got the first shot around the post, given that the shot was a good 30, 35 yards out. So I'm sure there'll be an element of disappointment there. In terms of what happens thereafter, sometimes you just get unlucky.
Right, just to finish quickly on the Prem, a few bits and pieces to talk about. We'll brush past Kepa again, playing out from the back just like he did against City. Wasn't punished against City, was against Everton. Tom Heaton against Leicester City for Aston Villa. Yes, they conceded 4, but a brilliant save from Soyuncu at the end from the header.
No, it was. I mean, look, Tom Heaton, and more of a general one for me on Tom Heaton, and I want to give him a little bit of credit. Of course, we had him on the podcast not so long ago, and so many people have come up to me since we did that podcast and just said how much they took from it. So, look, if you guys listening haven't listened to the Tom Heaton podcast, I'll certainly direct you towards that. I actually went and did an interview with him for Sky Sports News not so long ago as well, him and Neil Cutler, and I'm really pleased for him because, look, Villa aren't in the best place at the moment. However, you just feel like you've got someone like Tom Heaton behind you. He has got the experience. He's been here before with Burnley last season. Of course, they were struggling a bit. He's the type of keeper you'd want in a situation like this. Obviously, doing it for years, such a big character and so psychologically aware. And it's great to see that he's still playing to the same standard that he has done for the last few years. And I know that the Villa faithful have really taken to him.
And Sheffield United, a fantastic save from Dean Henderson at the end from Todd Cantwell.
What a save. I don't know of many keepers that make this save. The fact that he's on the move, he's able to set so quickly, and this should be a goal every day of the week. And the flexibility, the agility he's shown to get down to his left, and the speed he's shown, and you could tell the look on his face when he's got up, he was buzzing with this, because this is a match-winning save as well. And this is what Dean Henderson's doing. As much as he gets a little bit of stick, and there's been a couple of mistakes here and there, this for me proves what he is. He's a big game player. He's got a big mentality. Great lesson for a lot of young goalkeepers out there, where he keeps putting himself forward. He's willing to challenge himself. I love the journey he's been on. I think it's National League, League Two, League One, Championship, now Premier League. He's got a huge future ahead of him. He's learning all the time. But this, for me, match-winning save, it's a cliche about big goalkeepers coming up in big moments, because you can't necessarily control it. But what you can do is give yourself the best possible chance. Exactly what he's done. Brilliant save.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
We said it was going to be rapid.
It is. It has been.
I do hope we've hit the half an hour mark once we've edited and all the rest of it. Hopefully, it'll be bang on.
There you go. Fantastic.
Just going to try and prolong it a bit so I can,
so we get
just
a little bit closer. Are we there yet?
I think we're there.
Fantastic.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.